From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Michael Parker and D Program on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hour two of the show on a Friday afternoon. And wow, the stock market took a big, big hit this week. We were down another 281 points today. Yikes. And that kind of comes on the heels of the additional 0.5 basis points hike that we got in December. And I've said before, and I continue to believe this, I think there will be three more. If I had to predict, I'd say 50 in January, 50 in February, 25 in March. We'll see what happens. John Matlin brought up the point earlier in the show about the NFTs that Trump brought out yesterday to groans, and people like me were very perplexed by it. He has been widely ridiculed for it. But as John said, all 45,000 of these things have been sold. And at $99 a piece, that means they generated about $4.45 million. Now, how much of that goes to Trump? How much of it goes to whoever created this thing? I don't know. But they did sell out. And so now they're on the secondary market. And it gets even more interesting because those people who bought these NFTs, these non-fungible tokens, which I'm not a fan of necessarily, I don't. Maybe I'm missing something here, but I am not a fan of the idea of non-fungible tokens. That does not mean that the technology itself does not have value, because I think it actually does. Just in the idea of creating this art, I'm not sold on that. But regardless, you know, Trump had made this comment that he was going to come out with this big announcement. Many people thought it would be the announcement of his VP, and that would be Carrie Lake, or many people thought it might be having something to do with the Speaker of the House position. Instead, there was the announcement of these. He was calling them trading cards. He never called them NFTs. And then later on in the day, he made a more serious platform policy-oriented video that really seemed like the real announcement. And some people were trying to say, and I do not share this opinion, some people were trying to say, well, yeah, this is Trump doing the 4D chess. And really, this was all to get attention towards the actual story, which was the freedom of the press story that he was trying to get out. I don't tend to agree with that. And I said yesterday to John, you know, look, if that were the case, it worked. It didn't work at all, because the only thing that you're hearing people talk about is the NFTs. And a lot of people, all the late night show hosts were saying it. On the news shows, on the morning shows this morning, they were talking about it. So it completely overshadowed the very relevant things that he had to say about big tech, freedom of speech, and such. So, you know, what was the actual planning and theory behind this? I don't know. I know that people like Steve Bannon, Sebastian Gorka, many people who supported President Trump were pretty upset about it, and they didn't think it was cool at all. I would say that the $4.5 million, yeah, that's a cool amount of money, but it may be some of the most expensive money he will ever make, because this casts a shadow over the intention of the campaign, even though this is not necessarily related to the campaign. We don't know, you know, if supposedly none of this money's going towards the campaign. So you look, I don't know. The man can do whatever he wants to do. He is a businessman. And yeah, they sold out of these things yesterday. I didn't think they looked that great. I'm not a fan of the technology. I think it was giving people more ammunition to criticize him. But look, I'm not privy to what's going on in the inner circle, and maybe this is part of a very well thought out, elaborate plan that I am simply not privy to. But I don't know. I didn't think it was that great a thing to do at this point in the run up to an election in which he is the leader on the Republican Party. Will he be challenged by DeSantis? That remains to be seen. But things like this, I don't think help his sellability amongst those who are on the fence. But here again, I'm not getting any of that $4.5 million. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered here on TNT Radio.
Covering the world's news.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
More Twitter news has been burning up the news cycle, and here to hit us with the updates and unpack some of the fallout is TNT News producer, Mr. John Madlin.
All right, let's play Twitter catch-up. All the rage let's of the it. News cycle and causing the rage amongst those with liberal ideology and liberal activists and journalists, which one could easily argue are the same thing at this point. So last night, Elon Musk suspended the accounts of journalists from CNN, The New York Times, Washington Post, among others like Keith Olbermann. The reason why? Doxing in real time. The terms of service, according to Elon, now includes real-time doxing. Musk has been covered in a real-time, the reason why is doxing real-time. So Musk has been getting covered in real-time, and they're following his every move, and that is putting him at risk for risk of violence for either himself or his family. He has been concerned as he is waging war against the machine and letting out documents and internal conversations the world was never supposed to get their eyes on. Musk said, quote, "Criticizing me all day long is totally fine, but doxing my real-time location and endangering my family is not," end quote. The accounts that perform this action are getting a 7-day suspension. Great debate is occurring if this is okay or stopping freedom of speech. He said the terms of service apply to journalists as well. They don't get a free pass. No special treatment here. So some of the journalists were able to join a Twitter space and were speaking. Elon actually joined the space and answered some questions. Keith Olbermann is currently using the account of his dog. That's where we're at now. So also banned were the accounts that were also tracking not just his jet, but the one that belongs to Jeff Bezos at Amazon as well. So moving on to another topic, the U.S. government and Twitter. Now, with that topic, it has been revealed that new documents on how the U.S. government was using a secret Twitter portal to censor COVID-19 content, and they pushed back that way against the, of course, anything that went against the acceptable narrative. America First Legal has obtained a set of documents that it claims violates the First Amendment with how the government colluded with Twitter. The CDC worked with UNICEF, the World Health Organization, and Mafindo to slow and stop and censor what they determined was misinformation or disinformation. Mafindo is a third-party partner in fact-checking for Facebook, which is powered on funds by Google. The fact-checkers often usually have ties to left-wing outlets such as the Washington Post. On May 10th, 2021, a Twitter employee recommended that a CDC official enroll their personal Twitter account into the Twitter Partner Support Portal, and he described it as, quote, "the best way to get a spreadsheet like this reviewed," end quote. So the following day, that CDC official enrolled her personal account into the support portal to start getting expedited support with the reports that they needed to have Twitter start handling. So this is all very interesting and some very, very damning topics, Michael, but the tweet that came out a few hours ago has the internet abuzz, and that was from Elon himself, quote, "and soon, ladies and gentlemen, the coup de grace," if I'm saying it right, coup de grace, the translation is a final blow or shot given to kill a wounded person or animal. So what is next and when, with all things COVID and Fauci being talked about at nauseams, maybe that will be what's coming to light, but we will see. What is your take, Mr. Parker?
Well, I think you're right. I think it probably is about Fauci and it is about time, but I want to roll back a little bit to the people talking about the doxing. And on one hand, I get it. It doesn't look great that he's doing this. But on the other hand, what's interesting about it, in a bit of a Trumpian move in a way, is, you know, at the beginning of this week, we were talking about how, you know, all of these people that are complaining about this now were complaining about the fact that Joel Roth had been kind of semi-doxed. And, you know, they were all up in arms about that. Well, now, you know, he puts some of these people on suspension for only 7 days, which I don't think that's a big deal, because he's concerned about his own well-being and not being doxed. It's just interesting that, you know, in a matter of days, things can swing back and forth. And I would imagine that this afternoon, if that coup de grace does come, I do think it will be Fauci, and we will all have the entire weekend to stew upon it. So we await it anxiously.
It's a good Christmas gift because that's on the top of my list. But but let me you make a great point. Yoel Roth made his name was all over, his fingerprints were all over these things that came out, and he said that this was like, no one should see this. This puts him in danger. So imagine someone like Elon Musk right now, who the whole entire left, the whole entire establishment, governments around the world all want this man to be silenced. And you're talking about somebody tracking his jet in real time, tracking anything about what he's doing in real time. But yet Yoel Roth couldn't handle the fact that his name was attached to something that happened last year. So like you said, everyone was up in arms about that. Everyone always loved when everyone else got suspended. Now the terms of service are actually, if he updates them to the way he says, is actually being broken. Something's being broken. And they're not getting permanent suspensions. They're getting a timeout, essentially. They're even still allowed on Twitter spaces as of last night. So you're watching this all go down, and it's like they can't handle, the people that can't handle similar treatment or even treatment that might be issued correctly if this is against terms of service. We know they removed Trump because a bunch of activists, essentially. So he didn't break any terms of service. They said it themselves. So this is very, very interesting watching the hypocrisy in real time. And then, you know, a lot of people said, well, you should be allowed to do that. He's a public person. And yeah, so there's public people out there. So that would mean Yoel Roth's a public person. Do we have somebody live tweeting when he's getting to his local Starbucks at this point? And yeah, so I put forth a new poll that's got a couple of votes going, and people are in the majority right now saying that my idea makes sense. It's a little extreme, but this is how you stop hypocrisy. My plan, the John Matlin plan, is to, if you break the rules, you're either suspended or you can turn on your location services that will monitor your location in real time, that anyone on Twitter can click a link on your profile and it will show you where you're at the time. That way you're being in real time doxxed. So that would stop this immediately, because nobody wants a tracking device on them. And it's very simple for people to say, oh, it's okay for me, not okay for you, or you're public. Well, how about that? You know, like, people have a lot to say. They like to go out and dox people, but do it at the risk of being suspended, or do it at the risk of being tracked in real time, and see how comfortable you are when people are out there trying to, you know, scare you, threaten you, or perform a violent act on you.
You know, people, you know, you can love or hate Trump, you can love or hate Elon Musk, but in both cases, they've totally upset the apple cart here. You know, it's like what Trump brought to politics and the coverage of politics, Musk brings to the social media table, which is all of these questions that the establishment never wanted to have to deal with. And they didn't have to deal with it because everybody played ball. They all knew, okay, so here's the things we can and can't do. And we're going to go along with that. But now these two guys come along, mavericks who have their own opinions, and they have completely just turned everything upside down, and the establishment screaming bloody murder.
Yeah. And think about what they used to do, Michael. When there was no cameras everywhere, when there was no people following, and they can just lock up records, and then even though they're supposed to release them, lock them up, you know, like the CIA is doing with this whole JFK thing that Tucker covered last night. People used to just disappear if they upset the system to a certain level, and there was no way to really handle. But there's too much accountability, there's too much people paying attention, there's too many ways to communicate. And that is why they want to control that, because when everyone knows and everyone can speak, you can't really do what you used to do in these types of systems, which looks very much like the CIA had their fingerprints all over the assassination of a U.S. president who had waged war against the CIA. And, it, you know, it said it, Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted it today, and it said they used to kill people that would upset the system. They couldn't do it to Trump because the movement's too big and we're all watching. And it's sad, and it's really, really sobering to come out of that drunk world where we thought everything was okay. There's people that still really think that everything was on the up and up, but it's really, really, we're in a very great awakening, my friend. That's really what we're at. And I think these Fauci files, if they're holding some serious weight, and knowing his daughter worked at the company too, some people are going to really have to dig deep and listen to that cognitive dissonance to stay on the track that they're at right now.
And even as much as I really, I'll just say this, even as much as I hate Fauci and I hate Hillary Clinton, I want justice to come about in a legal fashion. I don't want vigilante justice. I don't want anybody to be doxxed and some crazy person then go find them via that. So this type of thing on social media, I don't think that we need to be doing that. And I will side with Elon on this, because I don't think it's not just him that he's talking about. In the future, they'll be able to track anybody you don't like. It's a celebrity, a politician, whatever. You don't like this person, if you're smart enough, you'll be able to track them. So that's not cool.
Yeah, I mean, you really need a name and just some searching. I mean, while I was running, I had somebody from the left start to try to dox me in my comments, and I was like, yes. I see what you're doing, and I don't understand what your goal is. So good luck with it. But it's not something that once you go to that level, that shows intent of a madman, if you ask me. So yeah, I mean, that's when debates stop being debates and it becomes more of a risk. So yeah, this is a good policy. And people need to stop doxing, period.
I agree. John Matlin, thank you so much. Thank you for the Friday updates. We will await what comes out of Twitter later today. You guys, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to speak with Igor Klibanov, and we're going to talk about health. We're going to talk about keeping ourselves healthy, especially if we're over 40 like yours truly. We'll be back.
You should hear what Greg Maybury is talking about.
The media lies, and of course, this is a recurring theme, not just in my program, but right across TNT and much of our alternative independent media, is criticism of the mainstream media for not reporting or engaging in far too much propaganda, and particularly more recently, far too much censorship. And certainly the JFK and the 9/11 events, they're almost synonymous with sort of media lies and misinformation and propaganda and censorship.
If there was a conspiracy and if some force killed a president and thereafter managed to get away with it for more than 60 years, that force is tremendously powerful.
The No Fly Zone with Greg Maybury on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds. And they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
The Congo provides 60% of the world's cobalt. Children as young as 7 breathe in cobalt-laden dust so you can drive an electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This hour, for the remaining of this hour, we're going to be joined by Igor Klibanov. He is the author of 8 different books on exercise and nutrition, including 3 Amazon bestsellers: High Blood Pressure Reversal Secrets, Type 2 Diabetes Reversal Secrets, and Osteoporosis Reversal Secrets. He is the CEO of one of Canada's premier personal training companies, which is Fitness Solutions Plus. You can go to his website, which is Fitness Solutions Plus. And Igor, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I'm looking forward to chatting.
Well, I'm glad that you are here. And we talk about health on TNT a lot. And for those of us who are over 40, especially in the age of COVID and just everything that's happening in the world these days, our health has probably, it's always been important, but there's more emphasis, I think, on it now than there has been in a long time. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is diabetes, because you have written a great deal about this. And here in the U.S., probably the West in general, but especially the U.S., we have incredibly high rates of diabetes. And then when COVID came along, we found out that people with diabetes were even more susceptible to the issues related to COVID. So first of all, let's start off talking about diabetes.
Sure. And my specialty is type 2 diabetes. And there's really two types. There's type 1 and type 2. The reasons are different, but the end result is the same, which is high blood sugar. But yeah, people who have diabetes are at much higher risk of getting COVID, getting hospitalized from COVID, and dying from COVID compared to people who don't have diabetes. But that's just COVID. What about heart disease? What about cancer? Yes. And a lot of other conditions, skin issues, eye degeneration. All these things are heightened. The risk for all these things is heightened when somebody has type 2 diabetes.
Explain to us, what is the difference between type 2 diabetes and the other diabetes?
Yeah, so there's type 1 and type 2. Type 1 diabetes is considered to be genetic. There's a very strong genetic component to it. Type 1 diabetes is thought to be an autoimmune condition. What that means is that your own immune system is attacking the pancreas, which is making insulin. And insulin is the hormone that people use to lower their blood sugar. Type 1 diabetics either don't have insulin at all, or they don't have enough insulin because their immune system is destroying the pancreas. That's type 1. By and large, people get it before they're age 30, and they can even get it if they're living a healthy lifestyle, eating a healthy diet, and exercising. Type 2, to contrast that, used to be called adult onset diabetes, but they've scrapped that name because more and more kids and teenagers are getting it. But by and large, there are way more people over 50 who get type 2 diabetes compared to type 1 diabetes. Type 1 usually happens before 30, type 2 usually happens after 50, although, you know, exceptions exist on both sides. Unlike type 1, when there is not enough insulin, type 2 is the exact opposite, too much insulin. So if viewers or listeners are wondering, if there's too much insulin, shouldn't that decrease blood sugar levels? Well, no. Why is there high blood sugar with both high insulin and low insulin? Because when there is high insulin, the body starts to ignore it. So we get something called insulin resistance. And so the difference between type 1 and type 2 on an insulin level is that in type 1, there is no insulin. In type 2, there is excess insulin, but the body ignores that insulin. So the end result is the same, which is high blood sugar.
So is your body building a tolerance to too much insulin like you would build a tolerance to a drug or something?
That's exactly it. There's an important concept that bodies ignore constant stimuli. For example, if our listeners are wearing a watch right now, they probably didn't focus on the sensation of that watch in their skin until I just mentioned it. They first probably noticed that watch in their skin when they first put it on, and then after a few seconds, they forgot all about the watch. Same thing with insulin. If you have constant high spikes and those spikes range for a very long duration, the body starts to ignore the message of insulin. And the message of insulin is bring blood sugar down. So it ignores the message of lowering blood sugar.
So in the diabetes 1, we treat that with the injections or what have you. But in type 2, we can treat that with adjusting our diet, correct?
Yeah. There are a lot of different ways to treat type 2. Type 2 is highly, highly reversible in probably about 85 to 95% of people. This is largely a lifestyle condition, whereas type 1 is reversible in only a very tiny, tiny, tiny segment of the population. By and large, type 1 is what it is, although that's not to say that you shouldn't and can't live a healthy lifestyle. It's just that you have to mind the condition.
And you said earlier that type 1 is like an autoimmune issue. And I did not realize that. I have Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune thing, but I did not know that diabetes was considered an autoimmune issue.
Yeah, type 1 is, type 2 isn't. And there's a lot of other autoimmune conditions like Crohn's, like multiple sclerosis and others.
All right. So you guys, we're going to take our quick bottom of the hour news break. I speak with Igor Klibanov. He's going to be with us throughout the hour, and we're going to talk about more about health, especially in 2022 these days. It's very important. We're going into the winter. Everybody needs to take care of themselves, especially those of us who are over 40. This is TNT's The Program. We'll be right back.
Big news.
Big news.
Big news.
The biggest breaking news story.
Holy crap.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Japan declared plans to possess preemptive strike capability cruise missiles within years to give itself more offensive footing against threats from neighboring China and North Korea. India Thursday successfully test-fired a long-range Agni-5 intercontinental nuclear-capable ballistic missile. A Peruvian judge ordered ousted President Pedro Castillo to remain in custody for 18 months, approving a request from authorities for time to build their rebellion case against him.
While you're enjoying your holidays, we'll be here with the news when you need it.
Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Fitness expert Igor Klibanov is my guest this hour. He works with a lot of high-value individuals in Canada, and he speaks at many different places. He's spoken at IBM, American Express, Royal Bank of Canada. And his specialty is helping people like me, over 40, overcome fitness and nutrition challenges. So let me, I just want to follow up a little bit more on diabetes too, because one of your books is Type 2 Diabetes Reversal Secrets. So give me one or two of the secrets.
Sure. So when I approach the secrets, I'm trying to think, what can I talk about competently within my scope of practice? I'm a personal trainer, so my scope of practice is exercise, nutrition, and supplements. There are a lot of things I don't talk about that may be effective, but are outside of my scope of practice, like medications, like insulin, like acupuncture, and so on. So what are a couple of the secrets? Well, nutrition. That's a huge secret, that in that there are a lot of misconceptions about it. The entire conversation about type 2 diabetes is centered around carbohydrates. But that's misguided, because there are two factors that are even more impactful than carbohydrates. The single most important factor for diabetes normalization, essentially, with nutrition, is just calories. And I list a lot of studies in my book that show when calories are normalized, that type 2 diabetes reverses itself. Sometimes way back to normal, but sometimes just lower than it was before, but still high. The second most important factor is still on carbohydrates. The second most important factor is fiber. And so the fiber requirements of diabetics is higher than the fiber requirements of non-diabetics. Whereas non-diabetics need between about 14 or so grams of fiber per 1,000 calories, diabetics need as much as 17 to 20 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories. And so if somebody just normalizes their calories and optimizes their fiber intake, a lot of times diabetes could be reversed in a matter of 1 to 3 months with no medications. And then the third most important factor is indeed carbohydrates. The problem with the discussion on carbohydrates is that people don't distinguish between high fiber carbohydrates and low fiber carbohydrates. People could be on a very high carbohydrate diet, but if it's a high carbohydrate, high fiber diet, that's okay. If it's a high carbohydrate, low fiber diet, that's not okay. It's one thing getting 65% of your daily calories through carbohydrates, and there's spaghetti or potatoes or white rice or bread. It's a different thing getting those same 65% of your calories as carbs when they're beans, peas, lentils, and chickpeas. They're both carbohydrates, but one contains a lot of fiber, one contains very little fiber. So that is secret number one, and that is optimizing your calories and optimizing your fiber. I'm going to group those two as one. I'm going to categorize them as nutrition. Secret number two is exercise. Exercise is very, very powerful for diabetes, but it has to be done the right way. There needs to be specificity in exercise prescription. Exercise for diabetes reversal is different than exercise for general fitness or weight loss, etc. And when we talk about exercise, we want to know the parameters of exercise prescription. Because when a doctor prescribes a medication, there's precision behind that. There is the name of the medication, the dosage, with food or away from food, morning or evening. There are also parameters to exercise prescription. Those parameters are what's called the FIT principle, F-I-T-T, frequency, how many days per week, intensity, how hard, time, duration, and type, cardio, strength training, or something else. And so, with exercise, I divide that into three categories. One is cardio steady state, Mm-hmm. Two is cardiovascular training, and three is strength training. And so what are the exercise prescriptions for all three? For steady state, the prescription is 150 minutes per week. So whether that's three times per week for 50 minutes, five times per week of 30 minutes, or any combination in between, that is the duration and the frequency. And what about the intensity? Intensity of moderate duration, moderate intensity cardio should be between 65 and 85% of a person's maximal heart rate. And the way somebody figures out their maximal heart rate is by subtracting their age from 220. So let's say our listener is 60 years old, their theoretical maximum is 160. And then they multiply that by 0.65 to 0.85, and they would work within that range for a steady period of time. So that is the exercise prescription for steady state cardio. For interval training, the prescription is different. The nice thing about intervals is that unlike steady state cardio, because the intensity is higher, the duration is allowed to be lower. And so what is the exercise prescription for interval training? Interval training, unlike steady state, only needs to be done about 3 days per week. So compared to 3 to 5 days per week, but it's lower. It's just 3 days per week. How many intervals? Between 8 and 12 intervals. The duration of each interval should be between 30 and 60 seconds. And the rest between intervals should be between 1 and 4 minutes. And the intensity, this is the key. The intensity needs to be above 85% of the maximal heart rate. So there's our exercise prescription for both steady state, intervals, and what about strength training? With strength training, this is probably one of the most powerful ways from an exercise perspective to optimize and normalize diabetes. We need between 8 and 10 exercises that work more or less the full body. That's part one. Part two, we need between 2 and 5 sets per muscle group. Part three, we need to do it 2 or 3 days per week. Mm-hmm. And part four, how many repetitions? We need somewhere between 8 and 15 repetitions. And here's the important part. These repetitions have to come within 1 to 3 repetitions of muscular failure. That is, if at the end of, let's say, 10 repetitions, you were to ask yourself, how many more repetitions could I have done? The answer should be, I could have only done between 1 and 3 more. If you think I couldn't have done 1 more, the weight was too heavy. If you think I could have done 4 more or 5 more and so on, the weight was too light. So that's right. Our exercise prescription for strength training. If we combine, whether strength training by itself can lower the average blood sugar, also called HbA1c, or glycated hemoglobin, it can lower that by between 0.6 to about 0.9% in a matter of about 3 months. Now, if somebody doesn't have diabetes, this sounds like a very low number. But because HbA1c is considered diabetic, above 6.5%, that's not 0.9% out of 100, that's 0.9% out of about 6.5. That's a very large chunk. Cardio by itself can lower HbA1c by between 0.7 and 1.1%. Now combine that to cardio plus strength training, and you can actually have a very substantial drop in your A1c of around 1.0 to 1.5%. And the very encouraging thing is that the higher your blood sugar, the greater the effect of strength training and nutrition and anything else. So this I would say are my two biggest secrets for reversing diabetes using exercise and nutrition.
I like it. And much of your work is with people who are high worth, overly ambitious people who are powerful people. And what do they, when they come to you, what are they looking for? Are they looking for overall strength? Do they want to increase their mental capabilities? What are they looking for the most? Or do they feel that they're deficient in?
Yeah, I do happen to work with a lot of executives, and they understand that their health is not just their health. Their health is their company's health. They might be in charge of a 50 to 800 person organization. And so if they are sleep deprived, if they are lacking energy, if they are unhealthy, their decision-making is affected. Their relationship with their staff, with their subordinates is affected. And so they want to be not just a healthy, like a happy manager. They don't just want a profitable company. Of course, that's important if you're running a business. They also want to be, they don't want to sacrifice their health for their business. So they want both. They want a good business and they want to be healthy. So by and large, that's what they're coming to me for.
And for those of us who aren't like high worth individuals and we want to go to the gym, and this is more of a kind of a COVID related thing, because there for a while, it's not happening at my gym right now, but there for a while, I needed to wear a mask, which is, you know, it's difficult wearing a mask when you're working out. But what do you tell people to do these days? You know, we're supposedly entering another period of increased COVID cases. Those people who want to work out, they want to get healthy, but they've got to go into a gym, supposedly wear a mask or whatever. How do you advise people to deal with these issues?
Do whatever you need to do to get inside the gym. I don't know the COVID cases worldwide, but I do know them in the greater Toronto area and where COVID cases are spreading. The three biggest places where they're spreading are long-term care homes, schools, and factories. Of all cases of COVID, 1% happen in gyms. And that's without masks. That's without masks.
I like it.
With masks, it's probably lower. And so I hate to tell people not to worry about it, but listen, if you are exercising and you're keeping your distance from other people, and you're taking care of your nutrition, et cetera, you're working at getting healthier, your chances of catching COVID are quite low. Even if you do catch them, if you're on the health track, you'll probably get over it fairly quickly. Also, the treatments today are better than they were when COVID first came out.
Yes.
So even if you do catch it, your risk of hospitalization and death is probably pretty low. Again, as assuming that, you know, you're under 80 years old, assuming that you're exercising, you don't have comorbidities and so on. And so whatever you need to do, get to the gym. Even if you need to wear a mask, that's okay. Just keep your distance. You know, maybe take longer rests between sets so you're not as winded, because it's already hard to breathe when you're strength training or doing cardio, but it's even harder when you wear your mask. But do whatever you need to do to get to the gym. That's option number one. Option number two, if you have a gym at home, keep exercising. Option three, if you're summer warm, so not Toronto, so if you're summer warm, you can exercise outdoors. My preference, COVID or no COVID, is to, if I'm doing cardio, I prefer to go jogging in the in nature as opposed to in my own condo on the treadmill.
Yeah, I get that. And another thing I wanted to ask you, and I've asked people this before, and so I'm curious what you think. For those of us who are getting up there, like, what are the one or two most, if you could only tell us to take one or two, what are the most important supplements that we can take? Listen, I'm 60 years old. So a guy like me, what would you say, Michael, you should be taking this?
Usually my supplement recommendations are based on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
However, here is what I can tell you based on the average person over 60. The requirements for protein for people over 60 are higher than people under 60. Why? Because their digestion is not as good, so they don't absorb protein as well as people under 60. So their requirements are higher. Therefore, either an outright protein shake, so a protein powder, or something called an EAA shake. EAA stands for essential amino acids. So one of those two. And the other thing that I would probably recommend is either B12, which again is decreased, not just in the diet, but in the absorption in people over 60, or a multivitamin that contains B12.
Right. Okay, so let me make sure I understand this. So you're saying that as we get older, we are absorbing less protein and less B12 into our system. So we have to take more of it.
Yeah. Here's the great irony. People's requirements for protein with over 60 is higher, and yet their desire for it is lower.
I mean, I'm a ladies and gentlemen, I'm a carnivore. I love meat and protein. So this, I love hearing this.
All right. Keep eating your steak. Although Michael, you are on the younger side of the over 60 crowd, but as people get even older, what happens is they start to lose their appetite. Food just doesn't taste as good. It's not as flavorful, even though the ingredients might be the same, method of preparation might be the same. They just lose their sense of taste. And that's why their desire for protein is lower, even though the requirements are higher. It's a great irony.
Interesting. Speaking with Igor Klivanov, we're going to take our final break of this hour on this Friday afternoon, and we've got more on the other side, so please stick around. We'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
So I appeared on Tucker Carlson Monday night trying to explain how Pete Buttigieg and the rest of them can just fly around and dump all sorts of CO2 in the air, causing more bad weather, according to them, and nothing happens. So I use the explanation that maybe they have a climate vaccine and they're immune to all this stuff. Or maybe they figured if they dump more CO2 in the air, they'll cause more bad weather, which means we can't fly, we can't drive, we can't put CO2 in the air, and so there'll be less bad weather. In fact, the weather in the United States next week is going to be such that there are going to be plenty of plane flights shut down. There'll be less than the normal amount of CO2 spewed in the air because people won't be able to go anywhere. So maybe it's a brilliant plan. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. Obviously, these people are either so dumb that they can't figure that out, or maybe I just got over the target and exposed them for the phony climate warriors they actually are. Get a sense of humor. Lighten up, Francis, and enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got. This is meteorologist Joe Bastardi, TNT's climate and weather watchdog.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Black Lives Matter was formed in 2013 following the trial of George Zimmerman, who was acquitted of murder on grounds of self-defense for killing Trayvon Martin, a 17-year-old African-American youth. In protest of the verdict, left-wing author and labor organizer Alicia Garza coined the term Black Lives Matter. Activists and art college instructor Patrice Cullors and Black Alliance for Immigration Executive Director Opal Tometi helped popularize the phrase as the social media hashtag, hashtag Black Lives Matter. In 2014, the movement attracted further attention after the fatal shooting of Michael Brown by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. The movement gained further attention during the death of George Floyd in 2020, when an estimated 15 million to 26 million people participated in the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests in the United States. Subsequent riots inspired and created by Black Lives Matter caused property damage of between $1 billion to $2 billion, involved the burning of cars and buildings, looting, assaults, and some deaths. As such, the 9,000-plus individual Black Lives Matter protests could be described as American history's biggest, longest, most destructive riot.
Twitter Files confirms the Biden campaign colluded with big tech to shut down reporting on Hunter Biden's laptop. Impeach Joe Biden now. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Igor Klibanov is the CEO of one of Canada's premier personal training companies, Fitness Solutions Plus, and he works with a lot of high-worth folks and people over 40. He works with large corporations and individuals, and we're talking today about what those of us who are over 40 can do to maintain our health. Another thing that you've written books on and you specialize in is high blood pressure reversal secrets. So short of pharmaceuticals, how does one reduce their high blood pressure?
High blood pressure, like diabetes, is actually very, very reversible in a very large majority of cases. Probably about the same, 85 to 95% of what they call secondary hypertension primary hypertension is reversible. And there's, and I should probably distinguish what that is. There's primary hypertension and secondary hypertension. Primary hypertension is the vast majority of cases of high blood pressure. That is purely a lifestyle condition. Secondary hypertension usually happens, as the name implies, secondary to an established disease like hyperthyroidism or kidney damage, etc. So first the kidneys were damaged and then the blood pressure went up. First the thyroid was damaged and then blood pressure went up. That's secondary hypertension. That's just a minority of cases. Again, the large majority are primary hypertension. And so how do we reverse that? Again, I'm a personal trainer, so there are four secrets in my toolbox: exercise, nutrition, supplements, and sleep. And since I didn't talk about sleep when it came to type diabetes, let me mention that right here because it's so important.
Yes.
There is something called sleep apnea. The word means without oxygen. And here's the interesting part. In people who do not have high blood pressure, the prevalence of sleep apnea is only about 4%. That's it. In people who have high blood pressure, it's about 61%. Now, there is another category of hypertension called resistant hypertension. What does that mean? That means that people are already on at least three medications for high blood pressure, and it's still not going down, hence resistant. And so the prevalence of sleep apnea in resistant hypertension is over 80%. And one study that I talk about in my book is that when these people with high blood pressure and sleep apnea get treatment for their sleep apnea, their blood pressure goes down. How interesting is that? It's a very simple treatment. It's just a CPAP machine, or there are others. You can just take your mouth shut. And that helps high blood pressure tremendously. Again, without any other interventions, without changes in diet or exercise or supplements, that by itself helps.
Is that because in sleep apnea, we're not getting enough oxygen into the blood system? So is that making the cardiovascular system, the heart system, work harder? Is that the idea?
That's exactly it. Yeah. Okay. There's less oxygen, so the blood, the heart has to work harder to get the blood to go to where it needs to go. So even 4% of the population, it's not 4% of the general population, it's 4% of the population of the same age as people with high blood pressure. It's one thing to compare people who are 20 to people who are 70. It's another thing to compare people who are 70 with high blood pressure to 70 without high blood pressure.
And right now we're seeing a lot of people that shouldn't be having all of these pulmonary issues. We're seeing a lot of young people having athletes, just young people in general, dying from pulmonary issues. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
So pulmonary issues can arise from a number of different things. Genetics, there's potentially a link to vaccines, who knows?
Yes.
Or maybe long COVID in the unvaccinated. So there's a lot of different links with pulmonary issues. But as with most things in health, get tested early. If you do have something, you want to know about it as early as possible so that you can get treatment for it. As opposed to taking what we call the ostrich approach, stick your head in the sand, pretend nothing's wrong.
Right, right. So another thing that those of us who work really hard and coffee, I know we all probably drink too much coffee, but what is your thoughts on coffee? I've got some right here beside me right now. What are your thoughts on coffee?
How much time do I have on coffee?
How much do you need?
This past summer, I spoke at a personal training conference for an hour and a half about the benefits and drawbacks of coffee. So let me narrow it down a little bit. Are you asking about coffee in general or specifically for high blood pressure?
Just coffee in general, because coffee has had a renaissance probably in the last 20 years. And I think this coffee has always been popular, but these days, I mean, it is the drug of choice, I think, for people who are trying to get stuff done. So, and I know I drink too much of it, but I love it. And just coffee in general, because most of us who are working, we got to have our coffee.
Oh, yeah. So benefits and drawbacks. There's one corporate presentation that I do called Healthy Foods That Poison, Why You're Getting Sicker and Fatter Despite Eating Healthier. Here is the 2-minute summary of that presentation. There's no such thing as a good food or a bad food, only the right food for the right person at the right time. And the opposite is true as well. There's no such thing as bad foods, only the wrong food for the right for the wrong person at the wrong time. So there are certain things that coffee is good for and certain things that coffee is bad for. And further, there are certain things that coffee is neither good nor bad for. And so when is coffee bad? Coffee is bad if somebody has generalized anxiety disorder. It can actually make their anxiety worse. In my book, The Mental Health Prescription, I talk about one study where people who are hospitalized for anxiety were taken off of caffeine completely for 21 days. In those 21 days, a lot of them had a complete remission of their generalized anxiety disorder. On day 22, the researchers brought coffee back in, and for almost all of them, their anxiety symptoms came right back. And so if somebody has generalized anxiety disorder, they should probably stay away from coffee. Another incidence when coffee is not good is when somebody has indigestion or acid reflux. Yeah. That's probably going to make it worse. Another incidence when coffee is not good if somebody has insomnia. And there are others. These are all examples when coffee is not good. But again, nothing is universally bad and nothing is universally good. So there are also circumstances when coffee is good. When is coffee good for you? The main reason people drink coffee, besides flavor, is alertness. It definitely improves your alertness. Another thing that coffee is very good for is actually depression. So how ironic that coffee makes anxiety worse, but depression better. And there's theories on why and so on. And yet another thing that coffee is good for is the entire world of endurance exercise. So it makes endurance exercise better. People are faster, they can complete longer distances, and it feels easier. And furthermore, so these are a few examples when coffee is bad, when coffee is good, and let me give you a few examples when coffee is fairly neutral. It's not neither good nor bad. Strength. Coffee does not affect physical strength. Endurance, yes. Strength, no. Likewise, anxiety, bad. Depression, good. Okay. It does not affect the risk of cardiovascular disease. Whether somebody drinks coffee or doesn't drink coffee, it doesn't affect their cardiovascular health, you know, one way or the other, positively or negatively. So nothing is universally good or bad. There's certain situations when it's good, certain situations when it's bad, and certain situations when it's neutral. If you enjoy it, drink it. If you don't enjoy it, don't drink it.
No, I get that. And I think that applies to most things. It's like, there's not a one size fits all situation with a drug or a particular diet or whatever. So I'm glad to hear that. Another thing I just read recently, and since you work with physical fitness, is creatine, because a lot of people in the past, I would hear people were pro creatine and then they're like, don't take the creatine. And then I'm hearing again now that creatine is actually good for you again and may be good for cognitive abilities as well. Have you heard that?
Absolutely. Creatine is one of the most tried, tested, and true supplements. There is probably more research in creatine than anything else, more than vitamin C, more than vitamin D. Maybe the only other supplement that can compete with creatine in terms of the volume of research is just caffeine.
I'm sorry, say that again. Is what?
Possibly the only supplement that can compete with a mountain of research of creatine is caffeine.
Okay.
Those are probably the two most well-researched supplements in existence. Research dates back to maybe the 60s or even the 50s. It's super safe for the vast majority of people. Now, nothing is safe for 100% of the people, but right. If somebody does not have pre-existing kidney damage, by and large, creatine is somewhere between neutral and highly beneficial. And you're right. Traditionally, creatine has been used for muscles to improve muscle strength, muscle size, etc. And yes, it does that effectively in about 80% of people. There are, by the way, 20% who are non-responders to creatine. But in more recent years, we found out that creatine is actually also good for the brain. So yeah, it has multiple applications.
And I was really glad to read it. I just read that this week because I remember coming up when I'd be working out and I would try to use creatine, and then a doctor or someone would say, oh, don't do that, you know. And now I read this because at my age, I am looking for natural supplements that will help me keep my brain as sharp as I can for as long as I can. So when I read that the other day, I took note of it. I was like, very interesting. Yep. What else would you say to people who are over 40? And people like me over 60, that's really good for brain cognitive function?
Some of the best stuff is just correcting deficiencies. There's another corporate presentation that I do called Everything You Wanted to Know About Nutritional Supplements, but we're afraid to ask. Here is the 30-second summary of that. Every vitamin, mineral, amino acid is good for you if you're deficient in it. No deficiency, no benefit, and sometimes outright harm. So the greatest benefits in terms of supplements come from correcting deficiencies, not in terms of adding what you already have enough of. To go from deficient to sufficient, very beneficial. Sufficient to excessive, somewhere between wasteful and harmful. And so one thing I advise people, especially over 60, to do, get their B12 levels tested. Very, very important. And don't just use the standard B12 test of serum B12. Use the gold standard, which is called methylmalonic acid. Methylmalonic acid. Because vitamin B12, the serum vitamin B12 test is good, but not perfect. Methylmalonic test is the gold standard when it comes to B12 testing. And if your B12 levels are indeed low or low normal, they're within the reference range, but at the bottom of the reference range, it's good to either take additional B12 supplements or eat more vitamin B12 containing foods. Again, I can't emphasize this enough. The greatest benefits come from correcting deficiencies.
Okay, I understand. So, and my last question is, because this is another kind of just question I've heard a lot in the past, and I don't know if it's true or not, but let's say I'm taking all these extra vitamins, my body doesn't need them. Sorry, I got to get graphic, folks. Am I just urinating them out, or what happens to the extra supplement that I'm putting in that my body doesn't want to use?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's a common myth about supplements, that they just give you expensive urine. And that's good. You want expensive urine, because by the time something ends up in your urine, it's already gone through the bloodstream. Whatever cells needed, whatever you took, they took it. Or if they didn't need it, they didn't take anything. But you'd rather have stuff that's harmless, but you're taking excessive amounts of, rather than be deficient. For example, with most supplements are somewhere around harmless. If you take excessive amounts, for example, vitamin B12, if you're excessive, no big deal. You just pee it out. Most B vitamins are harmless. Vitamin C, the worst that can happen with an overdose is you just get diarrhea. Cut back on the dose and you're fine. That's essentially what I have to say about supplements.
All right. Well, Igor, thank you for spending time with us today, because, I mean, health is one of the main things we should be looking at right now, just to keep ourselves sane and safe in the workplace, avoiding getting sick and doing the best that we can for the people that we work with and our families. Igor Klibanov, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, go to TorontoFitnessOnline.com. And also, are you on social media at all?
Only Facebook and LinkedIn.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, well, Igor, I appreciate the time today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. And I will be back here on Monday. I'm wishing you all a happy holiday. I got to get out of here. Thank you to TNT. Thank you to my producers. I'll catch you on Monday.